Welcome back to Beat Seeker. I'm your host, Matt McButter. In each episode, we explore the shifting world of music with world-renowned experts and artists to take you deep, deep inside the fascinating and changing world of music technology and music discovery.
And I'm your host, Mike Weider, reminding you to subscribe in Apple Podcasts and give us a five-star rating if you like the episode. You can visit our website at beatseeker.fm, where you'll find plenty of rabbit holes with extra content to dive into, guest backgrounds, and even a playlist with music recommendations from each of our guest episodes. Also, BeatSeeker swag. You can stay current and talk to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at BeatSeekerPod. If administered correctly, can music be used as medicine? We reached out to a fascinating company called MetaMusic for some answers. MetaMusic creates individualized playlists that reduce heart rate and influence the nervous system to stimulate a positive physio-endocrine response. The software uses algorithms to automatically create playlists based upon a range of academic data on how people consume music, like age, gender, and nationality, that prompt a positive physiological and emotional response.
Joining us today is Gary Jones, the CEO and co-founder of MetaMusic. Gary is an award-winning entrepreneur with 30 years of experience in music and content management. Previously, he worked on projects with Sony, Intel, Yahoo, PRS, and News International. Gary Jones' own musical journey began when his uncle bought him a plastic guitar on his 13th birthday in the mid-70s. He joins us from Hull, England. Gary, thanks so much for joining us on BeatSeeker.
You're welcome, Matt. Good to meet you.
Gary, in previous episodes, we've covered how music can impact our body's physiology in measurable ways. It can stimulate different parts of the brain, improve performance in sport, impact our memories, mental health, and much, much more. But we've covered mostly the research side of things. And I understand your company, MetaMusic, has taken it a step further and created an application that helps people realize health benefits of music. Tell us what MetaMusic is and how does it work?
Okay, cool. Yeah. So this is a 10-year journey for me. It started when I met Professor Mark Sander from Queen Mary University in London, who introduced me to music information retrieval algorithms. And being a musician myself, having worked in the music business on and off most of my life, I kind of had a eureka moment and realized that if we could use these algorithms, which effectively extract the digital DNA of a piece of music, so it's tempo, it's musical key, timbre, all those kind of features that you think about when you're a songwriter, and build a service that analyzes, does the analysis from a songwriter's perspective as much as anything else, then maybe we could create a service that is beneficial to health. And that, as I said, was about 10 years ago, and obviously the timing wasn't right then. The MIR algorithms weren't advanced enough. The market wasn't ready. So I pretty much spent that kind of interceding period between then and 2020 building a library of academic papers. Sorry to reference them again, but that's my life. I've got about 15,000. There are 25,000 plus on PubMed. I've read about 11,600 now, I think it is.
Wow, that's a lot.
Some of them are only two pages, so not that impressive. Some are only two pages, but it started off as an interest, became a sort of fascination, and now is an absolute passion for me. And the science behind it, as you reference, is solid. You know, there's every 40 years, but the great things of our time, Tolstoy. Martin Luther King. All those, Confucius have all referenced that how music makes them feel better. So the way we approached it is basically, taking those algorithms and from the early stages, saying, right, can I use these to mimic the human brain's response to music? What parts of the brain listen, process music? And we all listen to music as a whole, but the brain actually splits it. So it's lyrics on the left, music on the right. The auditory cortex does tone and harmony. The base of the brain is about power. The amygdala is involved in various aspects of music processing. Hippocampus is about memory, hence its importance in dementia, music and memory. And I put together a team in the start of 2020 of some leading scientists in this field. So Professor Mark Sander from QMUL, he's an MIR expert. I've got Dr. Catherine Finley from Reading University. She's an expert in music and pain. And over the sort of last couple of years, we've refined it. We put together a fingerprinting process, which we will continually look to refine. So what we do at the moment is we are just finalising our licensing with the major labels. We expose, we've got some catalogue of our own, but this will take us up to about 25 million tracks, including some foreign language catalogue and some of the minor labels as well. And what we do is expose them to MIR algorithms. We extract the various features. It goes into our secret source, which creates a fingerprint. And then we build build playlists that effectively reduce heart rate. It's called heart rate entrainment. It's nothing new. But the way in which we do it, we were able to measure using a biofeedback loop, which we call the digital drip. We're able to measure a user's response. And if they don't respond in the way they expect, we can swap tracks out dynamically. So it's not so much a playlist, which tends to be a fixed thing. It's a musical sequencer. And we can bring the heart rate by swapping the tracks out. We can bring the heart rate down faster or slower. That whole process is recorded by our machine learning process. And with a view to refining the fingerprint. So in 10, 15, 20 years' time, we can say we're actually dispensing musically, clinically as a medicine. And I think there's a very strong argument for that. And, it's non-invasive. There are no side effects with it. Other than in dementia, when sometimes a piece of music can be related or referenced to a traumatic event in somebody's life, we call that a red flag event. But we actually capture that. The heart rate will show that. And there's a process at the front end when we're working with care homes that enables us to at least try and capture some of that data. But, the positive aspects of music, we all self-medicate. So we know it increases dopamine, immunoglobulin A, reduces heart rate, it can reduce blood pressure, smooths the breathing, smooths the digestive system, improves cognitive response, increases oxytocin, which is important for childbirth. So, there's a whole bunch of positive things. And then the really positive one is the reduction in cortisol. And Voigt, there's a famous study by Voigt and Trapp, which showed a 29.8% reduction in cortisol through the use of music. So that's effectively where we are. We're developing our own streaming service now. We've piggybacked a couple of third-party services to date, but we're now using our own streaming service, or will be, when we launch in Q3 or later this year. And pretty much up to this date, we've been going through closed user group evaluations of, is the interface right? Is the user experience right? How do we integrate with existing workflows? Because as we all know, healthcare clinicians and practitioners and nurses are rammed to the hilt and have no little time. And you can have the best things in sliced bread. But if you can't integrate with their existing work patterns or at least make the adoption simple, then you're never going to get taken up.
Yeah. So that, there's a lot to unpack in there. You laid a lot of information on us around, different
you can add it later.
Different parts of the brain, hippocampus and amygdala and how you're reducing heart rate and some of these things. So maybe you can tell us, these all sound like positive kind of health benefits, but what specific medical issues would you then be treating with the app?
Yeah. So we look at pain and anxiety. Well, anxiety and mental well-being is kind of the high level one, if you like. And then you've got pain, which often couples with anxiety. So preoperative anxiety, postoperative pain, and cognitive impairment, which can be dementia or stroke, but we're more sort of the anxiety side with dementia reduction. So we've done a number of closed user groups where we've got a 91.6% reduction in heart rate and anxiety as a result of using MediMusic. So we're pleased with those stats. So it's very much focused on the pain aspect. Catherine Finley, who's, as I said, one of our advisors from Reading University at the Pain Clinic, she leads the team, as it were, the scientific panel. And there are seven scientists on the panel, and they're all contracted to us. They all work directly with us. And we work with four universities as well on top of that. So it's the pain focus. So we've got a real world validation pain trial starting on the 1st of June that looks at reduction in chronic back pain and opiate tapering. So whether we can taper opiate usage as a result of music. And we're talking with Harvard and the Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital at the moment, which is part of Harvard Medical School, about doing a very long triple blind RCT. Randomized controlled trial that starts from a small focus group or a small trial through to pre-op anxiety, post-op pain. So it's those kind of areas. We're very much B2B and we're very much about ongoing efficacy.
Got it. So that would be similar to a clinical trial that a pharma company would go through.
Yeah, and that's part of the challenge because in a lot of ways we get lumped in, we're digital therapeutic, but we get lumped into the same kind of process that pharma has to go through. And the last one, the one that's starting in June is reasonably simple as far as trials go. But it's 468 pages of form, it's 9 months, it's seven people, two universities, and 20 accompanying documents to get a tick in the box, and then two interviews with a mm-hmm. large panel to get a tick in the box. So it is very much, but it's important. You know, there's no point, and we're very much about cost benefit, and there's no point being able to show, not being able to show a benefit. For me, it wouldn't work. And we've got to be able to show that benefit to clinicians.
I suppose also that the potential harm, the fear of harm might be a little bit lower. Whereas if I take a drug, it could chemically impact me in negative ways, where I would hope that listening to some music isn't going to cause any kind of serious degradation of my health.
Yeah. Depends what you're listening to, but yeah.
Yeah, so true.
So that's it. That's actually a good point. I think you covered this a little bit. You said part of kind of your secret sauce is, you know, doing an MRI while people are listening to music, kind of thing. But maybe you could, you know, just explain to us how do you end up knowing what music to play to match the problem that you're trying to treat? And I would imagine it would be different for different people depending upon what their musical preferences are. Like, not everybody likes classical music or
calming for me, or it could be the worst thing I've ever heard.
We did an episode on how heavy metal music has some positive mental health benefits.
It does. It very much does. I think there are two answers to that question. The first being that we allow someone to select genre type at the front end. So there's an algorithm that we have at the front that looks at, you know, history of music in terms of sales. It looks at how we consume music. It looks at and it's different for male and female, how our tastes change over years and consumption changes and all those kind of things. And that's part of the initial process. So we also create a playlist based on a lot of that information, again, which is fed by the machine learning process. You know, did this track, I'm going to select this track, did person X previously who was similar to the current person, the current patient, like it, and all those kind of things. There's a lot of heavy lifting, complex maths that goes on in the background, but genre is important. And I think, you know, the other thing to say about this, and this is something I come across quite regularly when talking to clinicians or end users, is I like to select my own music. But the difference with this is a psychological difference, in the sense that when you're at home and you're in pain, you have the choice of painkiller. You can choose paracetamol, ibuprofen, aspirin. When you're in hospital, somebody gives you a painkiller and you trust that decision. And we're trying to capitalize on that same kind of psychology. You know, when you're at home, you choose the music you listen to. When you're in hospital, we're giving it to you for a specific purpose, to make mm-hmm. the pain meds that you're taking more performant, to reduce the amount of drugs that you're taking, and mm-hmm. to take your pain away. And I think that's like that when you explain that psychology to clinicians, and there's a lot of clinicians that are very, very supportive of this. And I know a load that are musicians themselves. When you put it in that perspective, people understand it. But yeah, genre, at the very highest level, there has to be some kind of genre, lean towards genre preference.
Yeah. Over the counter music versus prescription music.
Yeah. Basically.
Well maybe, yeah, we could talk a little bit about that, because I've got a lot of questions about, you know, how this would work in practice. Like, for example, is this something that I would download from the App Store to self-treat, or is it something where I'd be prescribed by a physician? It kind of sounds like the latter, but maybe you could walk us through a real life example of how someone might get treated with MetaMusic.
That's a great question, Mike. And I think, you know, that's part of an ongoing conversation, is how do we deal post? So you go into a hospital and you have an operation, then you go to the pharmacy on the way out and they give you the drugs to continue your medication right at home. We're in that kind of conversation area at the moment with some of the hospitals we're talking to, clinicians. But the way it works, the way we want it to work, and it's, this is the best way for a number of reasons, is we're actually creating a device called the MediBeat device, which is a music player. And it stems from, there's a movement in the States called Calm Tech, where you're using a device specifically for the purpose it's intended. If you've got a mobile phone, one of these, there's social media messages pinging up. There's all kind of things pinging up, and that distracts you from what you're doing. So it almost like interrupts the process where you're taking the pill, and you may forget to take the pill, if you like, from a physical perspective. So we are looking, this actually, to be fair, came from an NHS trust in the UK who suggested that we do this, or would like us to do this, is to create this device that connects directly to our platform, that's wall-mounted. In the US, the same as UK, you've got hand scanners when you go into supermarkets, and you kind of put your card underneath, you scan, and you scan your food, and then it automatically charges your debit card or your credit card or what have you. It's the same kind of principle. So they're rack-mounted. They'll connect via APIs into a patient record system. And all the nurse has to do literally is pick it up and give it to the patient, because it will already be pre-configured.
But you're contemplating that, you know, this is not a self-treating application for an individual. It's a physician-led formal treatment, like I would be prescribed a drug. I'm going to be prescribed Metamucil and to be set up and managed by my care provider.
Absolutely, and that the rationale for that is quite simple, in the sense that if we can get buy-in at the highest level from a medical professional in terms of the overall benefits of music to health and what we are doing, then that permeates down. Because then, you know, in 6 months, 12 months time, we do have this conversation on a regular basis. Do we do a B2C model? At the moment, our focus is B2B to show the cost benefit. Because as I said, you know, there's no point doing this unless we can show medication savings.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And we believe we can. There's enough research out there at the moment that substantiates how music makes drugs more performant. And we can get access to NHS prescription records and those kind of things. And our platform is specifically built to be able to show the ROI, KPIs, cost benefit. And if we can do that, then it kind of permeates down. But we would like to be in that arena, but we need to validate it and get support from the top of the tree before we start climbing down it.
Sure. You know, there was a video on your site of an elderly gentleman with dementia who seemed like he was being challenging to manage, aggressive behavior to his caregivers, and then, but seemed to be calmed by the music. Maybe you could just walk us through what was happening there. And
Sean's typical of kind of extreme Alzheimer's or extreme dementia, and particular period called sundowning, which is more towards the end of the day when a dementia patient will go through a process called personal hygiene. So they get a bath, et cetera, after going to tea, and they're put to bed. And they get anxious. And it's, you know, some people say it's to do with light reduction and things like that, but it's called sundowning. And that's when anxiety presents itself the most. So Sean was incredibly aggressive. They had secure security lots of times. He wasn't a small man. He's not a small man. And you know, you saw it for himself in the interview with his daughter. And we see it here in the UK. You know, we've seen it a number of times with patients getting aggressive through dementia, because it's the confusion, it's the frustration, it's frightening, basically. So music is that familiarity with music. And when in dementia, music is the last thing that the brain forgets. And this is, you know, this is proven. Then it kind of gives them comfort. And that's effectively what happened with him. And music's being used for, you know, calming stutters and all sorts of things, speech impediments, all those kind of things as well.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, physicians can be skeptical or reluctant to accept sort of alternative treatments. You know, how has it gone for you in getting their buy-in? Like, it sounds like you've had some that are musicians themselves that may be more receptive to this message. But in general, do you think the medical community is ready to accept this as a legitimate and studied and validated form of treatment?
I think those are the two key: studied and validated. If it's validated and we do the studies correctly, and we've got a pretty solid 2-year plan for trials, both in the UK and the US, which we'll be funding ourselves, in part funding ourselves anyway, some instances. So you get that kind of information. It's more about workflow. It's more about the integration. I think if you can prove that it works, then it's making it available and finding a champion. You always have to find a champion, even with new drugs and things like that. I mean, I know from... Mm-hmm. experience in the healthcare, you need a champion to get a new drug in somewhere. We've only, to be honest, in the last 3 years, we've only had one doctor come back and say, can't see the benefit of it. And he was in primary care, and he said, well, people prescribe their own music. And I think that was more down to us not relaying the message correctly than his lack of understanding on his part.
Yeah. So, I know there's also like a music therapist. We interviewed one on the podcast a while ago. Is that a channel that you think would work well, or about people who are already using music as a therapeutic, but maybe don't have a productized offering like you have to assist them?
Yeah. And I think what we're looking to do is make music therapy scalable for music therapists. So we're working with our catalog providers at the moment, licensees, on creating a service where a music therapist can choose tracks from a typical library of 25 million tracks and select whether they want the vocals removed, whether they want the backing music removed, whether they want the bass removed or the drums removed. The drums removed, they've got the click track. Because music therapists tend to play along, and they tend to get their patients to play along. And then that's something that their patients can take away. And I think to get back to your question prior to that, you know, the understanding from the healthcare industry, in the UK, we've got about 1,000 MTs, music therapists. In the US, if you look at psychiatrists as well who practice it, it's about 32,000. So it's a lot more established in the US than the UK, but it is growing here. And there is an overall, you know, it's been, like I said, it's been around 40 years. It's not necessarily a new science. It's just what we have now is the ability through artificial intelligence, machine learning, digital music, and the internet to deliver it. So, you know, we've got the pill making machines now, and we're trying to make the pills.
Very cool. Very interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about something else on your site. You reference a new product called MediBeat that's forthcoming.
That's the hardware. So that's a music player. So it's rack mounted, connects to our platform, has our OS on it that does all the stuff that we want it to do in terms of recording heart rate and those kind of things. And it's a lot easier than having it's a lot cheaper, a lot easier than having a smartphone lying around. And it's easier. And to be honest, when you're going and explaining the service to somebody, if I was explaining it to you, I'm sitting in front of you trying to get you to adopt the service. I show you a piece of hardware with everything installed, and all you've got to do is put it on the wall and sign up. Or I say, download this app. And you've got to find a device to put it on, et cetera. But, you know, what we're doing is we're creating the devices, and the devices are part, it's a subscription service, and the cost of the device is covered in the subscription. So it's pretty much like
that. So you're basically building a sort of specialized iPod, if you will. It's a music music player only that has this biofeedback loop integrated.
Yeah, and that's been driven by one particular healthcare trust that we've been speaking to that don't want mobile phones lying around that are prone to theft. They don't want hundreds of chargers lying around. They want a really simple solution that delivers, you know, that is cost effective and cheaper, which it is, and delivers them the service and the benefit cost reduction that in drug, you know, more performant drugs that they would like to see. So it's all been, as I said, you know, we've done the last 3 years has been very much about testing things and talking to people and. Well, the last 2 years prior to the start of this year. And this year is about consolidation and moving forward. But yeah, very much so.
So on your way out of the hospital, you know, you get the script and it says, you know, here, some blood thinners, some codeine and your MediBeat. Grab your MediBeat machine as well.
Well, let's hope so. Someone once said to me, you know, what is your legacy? When I'm lying on my deathbed, wherever that may be in a hospital, and someone hands me a MediBeat device, I know, you know, we've done okay.
Very cool. So interesting. So we also like to ask all of our guests, Gary, if you have a music recommendation. We've got a guest picks playlist. Wow. So do you have something that we could put on our playlist?
Oh, my something music soothing? Taste is so eclectic. I'm listening to Damien Rice. I mean, I love Damien Rice, but I haven't listened to him before. So I'm listening to Damien Rice's album called O at the moment. It's brilliant. Blower's Daughter is a fantastic track. We'd be here all day if you ask.
No, one's great, and it's a very eclectic playlist as well. I mean, everything's on it because we've had a very diverse group of guests, so that's great. We'll put something by Damien Rice on there. Finally, if our listeners want to follow you or your work or learn more about the company, where's the best place for them to go?
LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Gary Jones, Medi Music. That will get you to link. Or look for Medi Music and then connect to me via that on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way. Or email me via the website. There's an email address on the website.
Excellent. Gary, thanks a lot for being on the show today. It was really interesting to hear about
your company. Matt, thanks very much indeed.
Thanks, Gary.
Take care.
You've been listening to Beat Seeker with your hosts, Matt McButter and Mike Wider. If you like the show, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts and hit the subscribe button. While you're there, leave us a rating and a comment and share it with your friends and colleagues. If you want to dig deeper into this content, visit beatseeker.fm. That's BEATseeker.fm. Interact with us on social media at BeatSeekerPod. BeatSeeker is recorded in the Devil Lake Studios and the Tunnel Under Arundel. The show is produced by Matt McButter, Mike Wider, and Kate McCartney. Thanks for tuning in and keep seeking.